Welcome to the Advocacy Podcast, Journeys to Excellence. We speak with Queen's Counsel, trial lawyers and judges from around the world about how they excel in the courtroom. Please subscribe on your favourite podcast platform and visit us for additional resources at theadvocacypodcast.com.
I'm your host, Bibi Badejo. Today's brief episode is all about finding your voice, a vital skill in our profession. We'll begin with the inspiring thoughts of Professor Leslie Thomas KC, followed by highlights from Queensland Director of Public Prosecution, Carl Heaton KC, and invaluable tips from Lucy Cornell, voice coach to trial lawyers globally.
One of the best advocates in the oral tradition at the bar that I've seen, and my mentor has to be Courtney Griffiths QC. I remember when I was a very young advocate, I just started at Garden Court Chambers, which is my chambers in, which is based in London. In my early years, I did some crime, not a lot of criminal law, but I did some crime, as most advocates in common law sets had to do. And Courtney was, at the time, one of the senior members of Chambers, and he took me under his wing. And at that time, I hadn't done a criminal pupillage traineeship, so I didn't have a clue about criminal advocacy. And I went into court and it was just luck, really, as to whether or not I got a good result or a bad result. And then the opportunity came for me when I was co-defending on a case with Courtney. And I just looked at that man in awe. He held the court with everything about him. He had this majesty when he was addressing the court. He was funny. He could switch it about in the way that he spoke, so he could speak in a very proper British accent. And then all of a sudden, he would switch to Jamaican Yardie and just have the court in stitches. And I thought to myself, my goodness, what this is telling me is there is no right way of doing advocacy. Because up until that point in time, I had been labouring under the misapprehension that to be a good advocate, you had to follow in the tradition of previous good advocates. And here's the thing. The profession in which we work is very white, very middle class, in fact, middle upper class, you know. It's known as a gentleman's profession. And in the past, you know, you had to be a person with money to enter the profession because of the way that barristers are paid and all the rest of it. And the role models that we had were middle class white men, and that is what people expected. So you've got your Marshall Halls, your Rumpoles, who speak in a certain way and are expected to address the court in a certain way. Courtney, for me, shattered that illusion. He taught me that you could be just as effective, just as devastating, just as good using your own voice. Well, that made me look and reassess who I was. You may not know this, Bibby, but I'm a Londoner. When I'm not speaking very slowly, I used to speak very fast with a very strong South London accent, because that's me. I grew up in social housing. My folks lived in a housing association flat near council flats. I went to a comprehensive school. You know, I used to drop my H's and so on. I used to speak with a ever so slight Cockney type accent. And then when I came to the bar, I thought I had to abandon who I was. And you see this often. You see people speaking in these really strange tones and you think, why are you speaking like that? And right at the very beginning of my career, I was put under that sort of pressure. I mean, I'll give you an example. I went into court on my very first occasion, and it was a family. I was in the High Court of Justice in, I think it was Court 37 or Room 37, and I was doing the injunctions, and I was doing a family case where I was representing dad, and the mum was, there was a dispute over the kids, and the mum was trying to get an injunction against the dad. And in court, I went in and I said to the judge, I'm representing the dad. And this judge blew up at me. He was like a volcano. Dad! Dad! We don't use that word in this court. And I was thinking, well, blow me down, what have I said wrong? I said, okay, you don't use that. And it was one of those days that I just couldn't say anything right. You know, you don't say dad, you don't say okay. I went back to chambers and I said, you know, this judge really chewed me out, really made me feel small. What did I do? Oh, well, you know, maybe you could have said, you know, the word father. And I was like, but what's wrong with calling, you know, on a family case, what's wrong with calling the mother mum and the dad dad? I don't get it. And as a result of that experience, my advocacy changed. I tried to be something that I wasn't. I was using expressions that didn't come naturally to me. It put me at a disadvantage because it was trying to learn a language that I wasn't used to. Now, here's the thing. If you are using a language that is not natural to you, you are not going to be as effective a communicator. And so when I saw Courtney speaking in Jamaican patois, switching up the cross-examination, and so when he had a black client, he went into a patois and the client could understand him. I thought, why not? Why not? This is about communication, persuasion, and he's persuading the court, and he's communicating, and he's effective. And so I've said previously, it's important to be who you are and embrace who you are. And I really mean that. And in the 30 years that I've been at the bar, I've seen advocacy change. I've seen people from up north hold on to their accents and not try to develop some strange southern, you know, home counties accent. I've seen many people of colour question using their own voices and dialects and do so effectively. And when I've been in front of juries, particularly London juries, I speak like them. And I feel no shame, and nobody's going to call me out for doing so. That is embracing who I am and speaking in my own voice.
How would you describe yourself as a younger advocate, and how would you describe yourself now? What are the differences?
As a young advocate, I was a little sort of anxious about the process of the trial. I was much more concerned about making sure I got the process right so that the advocacy probably then became a little secondary. In fact, when teaching advocacy, I've often said that much of what we do because we've seen other people do it, nobody yelled. And I think that's kind of how I found my way through those early experiences of doing trials. I'd seen prosecutors particularly, but advocates generally doing trials. I'd seen how other people did it, and I set out trying to emulate that and navigate successfully through the trial. But as I got older, more experienced, I realised that the advocacy side of things is as much of importance as the process side of things. And so then I set about not just navigating successfully through trials, but trying to use my advocacy to navigate through trials successfully, if you appreciate the difference. So as I gained more experience, I was able to bring more of my own personality, more of my own style, unshackle myself from what I had seen of other people, and bring my own style and my own personality to my advocacy, which is, again, a thing that I think is very important, that young advocates be reminded that they don't have to emulate some archetypal barrister, that it's important, particularly when you're dealing with a jury, it's important that you bring your own personality to your advocacy style, because otherwise a jury is going to be able to see through you. If it appears as though you're acting, if it appears as though you're trying to be something that you're not, you'll lose credibility in the eyes of the jury. And if you lose credibility, well, then your ability to persuade will be significantly reduced.
You answered what was going to be my next question, which was, when you saw something that you really liked, did you make it your own? And the answer obviously is yes, you found your own voice.
Yeah.
But I suppose the follow-on question from that is, how did you make it your own? Because I think for some people, having heard that Eminent Silk say something that sounded absolutely amazing and trying to copy it yourself, but it doesn't quite work, there's a disconnect. Mm. I suppose it's that, how do you make it your own?
I think recognizing that it is important that you be yourself in front of a jury, and you might see something that you find impressive, but you've got to analyze it as to whether or not it is compatible with who you are as an advocate, your personality, and the way you communicate. Don't just steal some turn of phrase or some particular affectation in court if it's not going to suit you. I remember now many years ago, and in a regional town, there was a barrister who was perhaps some might unkindly describe as being a little bit pompous. And he was renowned for beginning what was, I guess, going to be a submission which was difficult to sell to the judge. And he would say in this big pompous voice, "And I may now be on the precipice of a bold submission, Your Honour." And it was, I suppose, as a young advocate, it sort of seemed all a little bit Rumpolean, and so it was impressive. But, you know, just purely from a theatrical point of view. But if you analyse it from a persuasive point of view, I think your assessment of it is different. And if you look, and I certainly encourage young advocates and indeed more experienced advocates to always be watching other advocates and see what they do. And if you find something is persuasive, analyse why it is persuasive and then assess whether or not you can import that into your own advocacy style.
So let's talk about some real practical things. What's always going to happen is, when you're under pressure and you're in action, your range will diminish anyway. So the best way to rehearse or practice is to do it in an extreme way, or a more extreme way than you normally would. So there's a couple of ways you could do it. I mentioned earlier, if you can just get out of the house and use your voice in extreme ways, and every week, once a day, that would be really healthy for your practice in court. By that I mean literally take the dog to the park and yell, go fetch, or throw a frisbee to it, or throw a ball to it, or take a child, borrow a child and go to the park and play on the climbing frames with them. Whatever you're doing, like, do it vocally. Or go to a sporting match and go to a rock concert. Can we do that these days? But whenever you can, and do use your voice to extremes. Because the more you stretch it out, the more play you have. So that's number one. The second thing is, as you mentioned, speak your text aloud in your chambers. Pull it apart and put it in your body and put it in your voice. Speak it aloud. But when you speak it aloud, it's not just, ladies and gentlemen of the court, I'd like to tell you that blah, blah, blah. You got to speak it aloud, like get up, walk around the room. I often have, and this is going to sound actory, but I'd love you to do it anyway because it's all about play. The more playful you can get with your voice, the more range you'll have in court. To jump up and down, walk, you've got one thought, walk to the other side of the room, jump in the air and say the thought as you're jumping and landing, and then walk somewhere else. Jump, speak it, land. Move your body around and dip, get on the floor, roll around. Anything you can do to stretch your voice around. Now, that's going to be terrifying for advocates. I know you're all shrinking in your chairs right now while I'm saying this. If that's too much, then at least stand up and at least play with your voice and take your voice into different places as you're speaking. So it will go too far. So, ladies and gentlemen of the court, I'm going to, you know, do silly stuff like that. The best place to do it is in the car. Everyone can hear everyone these days. I think if you can get in a car and put the windows up, then that's the sort of most private place you can be. And do it there to just find the extremes, because we've forgotten how to do that these days. So that's the practical stuff. It sounds a bit ridiculous and silly, but that's the most practical way to do it.
Are you an experienced trial lawyer who feels like you've hit a plateau? If you want to take your advocacy skills to the next level, feedback is key. And I have just the thing for you. I'm Bibi, the voice of the Advocacy Podcast and founder of The Advocacy Coach. Every month, I host The Advocacy Clinic. It's a free and unique online platform for lawyers to practice oral arguments or witness handling with seasoned actors. Then receive real-time, personalized feedback. Whether you actively engage or simply observe, it's an unmatched opportunity to hone your advocacy skills. To join, just sign up at theadvocacycoach.com/clinic. Become unstoppable at court with The Advocacy Coach, your partner in your journey to advocacy excellence.
Thank you for listening to the Advocacy Podcast, Journeys to Excellence. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and visit us at theadvocacypodcast.com for reading lists and other resources. Until next time.